A big Tuesday night here on the Fan Pregame Ailish for our Justin Cuthbert. Lots of massive hockey games across the network tonight. Playoff clinching scenarios, division titles to be won. Washington and Philly, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet West and Pacific. That's the biggest one. We're going to get into some of the like must-have scenarios, but that one could determine a lot for this wild card race in the Eastern Conference.
Definitely. Big games, though, extends to Major League Baseball. Big win for the Blue Jays last night. An opportunity to win a series tonight from Rogers Center. We'll have Adnan Virk on, a Yankee fan, in a couple minutes to help tee up the matchup. Blue Jays-Yankees, Rogers Center.
We're going to chat with Shayna Goldman of The Athletic at 6:30. She's got a very great analytical case for many of the main Hart Trophy candidates. So we'll go through those and what are the most important factors when you have to cast your ballot. And we don't have to do that, so we can just argue.
And best bets, of course, the play-in starts tonight for the NBA. So let's talk about the NBA a little bit from a betting perspective before the half hour is through.
Okay, so we mentioned a big night in the NHL. There's a couple scenarios we can lay out for you. The biggest one, I love a win and you're in. Control your own destiny. You don't have to worry about X, Y, Z, and the Capitals have that tonight. They can clinch a playoff berth with a win against the Flyers, and they're in. But on the other side, the Flyers, they need to win in regulation and have Montreal win in regulation as well. So that one going head-to-head could be, we could see some funky stuff, because if the Flyers need to win in regulation, let's say they're down a goal or they're tied in regulation, they will have to pull their goalie. And I know if Jeff Merrick's listening, he would be so happy to hear that, because they could be pulling their goalie 10 minutes left in the third trying to get a win. This is a big one tonight. I think that's one I'm really excited to watch when two teams are fighting tooth and nail to get into the playoff and they happen to be against each other. I think that's going to be a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to keep that one in mind for best bets, because that one is interesting with that wrinkle with the Flyers having to win in regulation. Everything to play for in the Eastern Conference. But I think the most interesting game, or at least the biggest game of the night, for meaningful playoff implications, I think involves the Vancouver Canucks and the Calgary Flames. The Canucks have a 3-point lead over the Oilers for first spot in the Pacific Division. But if they drop this one, the Oilers, of course, will be able to pull within one. And then the Canucks have a tough game against the Jets, who are still working their way toward home ice in the first round in their last game of the year. And I don't know if the Oilers are going to lose again, at least in this regular season. So I think it's paramount. Top spot in the Pacific Division is a major, major advantage. The Vegas Golden Knights are sneaking up on the Kings for third spot. Like, Edmonton, with this huge run, playing as well as they are, only to have Vegas in the first round would be pretty tough
on the
Oilers. All that for a really, really difficult first-round matchup, and they all are if you come in second place in your division. But if they can steal first from the Canucks, which requires Calgary to win tonight against Vancouver, I think it could be very, very meaningful. So crucial tonight that Vancouver gets the 2 points and they can rest a little bit before going into the playoffs with the number one seed.
I think there's a very interesting conversation to be had against this Bruins, Panthers, Maple Leafs, like, triangle right now. Because last night the Bruins drop a game to the Washington Capitals 2-0.
16 shots for the Bruins.
A very lifeless effort.
That's
from the
not Bruins-like, is
the
it?
The Bruins have the opportunity to clinch the Atlantic with a win tonight. So that's a big one for them. But the Panthers also have the opportunity to clinch the Atlantic with a win, and with the Bruins losing. But both of those teams kind of can control, if they want to just blow the games, who they might play in the first round. Obviously, the Matthews 70 goal is going to be an important one for the Maple Leafs tonight and tomorrow. But the Bruins last night, it kind of looked like they were maybe letting their foot off the gas. Do they want to play the Maple Leafs, possibly, if they just kind of mail this in? It's an interesting discussion folks are having online. But when you saw the effort they put in, it was kind of a lack of an effort. So I wonder.
And does Florida want to play the Maple Leafs? I mean, the We Want Florida got obviously turned around on the Maple Leafs, and there was a lot of We Want Toronto, or We Wanted Toronto. But yeah, the motivational element between all three of those teams is pretty fascinating, because they got the Austin Matthews 70-goal chase, and it's like preservation. It's that and preservation, it feels like, for the Maple Leafs, because they're not moving anywhere. But what does Florida bring to the table tonight? What does Boston do against Ottawa? And what is the matchup by the end of this week? It's pretty fascinating there in the Atlantic Division. And yeah, the antenna up a little bit after Boston's effort last night.
This one's tough. If you're a Penguins fan, a Penguins player, you're just watching at home tonight, because they're also in this four-way race for the wild card. They need Montreal and Philadelphia to both win tonight. And then they have to go in and beat the Islanders to secure their spot. So the Penguins still have a chance. But I think they're in the worst case scenario of all this. They're sitting at home watching two teams that need to have big wins, which would be Montreal and Philadelphia. And, you know, Montreal having you putting your faith in Montreal against those Red Wings that came back and stormed into overtime to win. That's a tough one. Then also putting your faith in Philadelphia, who we just mentioned, the Capitals, they can win and they're in. And then you have to also go in and deal with your own business the next night against the Islanders. I think that's the easiest part of it. You deal with your own business tomorrow night. The Islanders are already in. They'll probably rest up. But the Penguins having to cheer for two different teams tonight to hopefully get into the wild card spot, I'm not liking their chances, even though I really wanted to see the Penguins get a playoff push.
Yeah, even if it's unlikely, you'd rather be playing that game tonight because at least mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's an honest effort. And whatever happens, the chips fall as they may. But now you're just waiting on results, and then you got to get up and play tomorrow if the results don't go your way. And yeah, they'll be shot out of a cannon tomorrow if the results do break their way.
There's a lot of results that need to go their way.
Yeah, we'll do best tomorrow, Pittsburgh, if they have a chance. I think we'll be betting them. But yeah, it'd be easier to play this game tonight while simultaneous with the others just because, yeah, there's a lot of, I guess there'd be some angst watching it, but you want to be in control or at least in control of what you can control. And the only thing they control is their game, which is going to be played tomorrow.
Over the next 72 hours, the final 72 hours of the season, regular season, there's still a couple things up for grabs. And Frank Cervelli, our friend, laid this out nicely for us. Top seed in the West, either Dallas or Vancouver. The Atlantic Division title, either Boston or Florida. The Pacific Division title, either Vancouver or Edmonton. Third place in the Pacific, which is a big one, either the Kings or the Golden Knights. And, again, four teams vying for the final wildcard spot in the East, Washington, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and Philadelphia. So just when we said we went through that stretch of time where there's really nothing to play for, all of a sudden the final 72 hours of this season has a bunch of things to play for. And, of course, there's still some statistical things like Connor McDavid got his 100th assist last night, which was awesome. Even though there was 9 goals scored, he still managed to get one. Mm-hmm. And Nikita Kucherov is going to have that same opportunity tomorrow night. He only gets one shot, and that's against the Maple Leafs. Tonight, Matthews has a chance to get 70. Of course, he's got tonight and tomorrow night to do that. And we're going to have this Hart Trophy debate a little later with Shayna Goldman. And all of that is encompassing the odds changing here and there. Now looking like Matthews is the second favorite for the Hart all of a sudden after all this discussion. So maybe that's getting ahead of him possibly scoring 70 tonight or tomorrow night. And if he does, people will be rushing to bet, but he's already the second favorite.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by how Sheldon Keefe approaches the next two nights. Because, yeah, the Matthews thing kind of took on its a different life form over the weekend. And then there was, like, I guess, mild regret that was conveyed around the way that was handled. But, yeah, it would be so much easier for the Maple Leafs to just control the next 2 days if Matthews can get that goal early, because you know it's going to be a story that goes from one day to the next and that it gets harder to make the right decisions, or at least the decisions that would be considered safer. So tonight, early, may be really, really important for Austin Matthews and definitely take some of the stress off the table for Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah, that last game, Matthews played almost 24 minutes and had 10 shots on goal. I don't anticipate that being tonight or tomorrow's goal for Sheldon Keefe. I know he kind of was sheepish about allowing that to maybe control the narrative around the team, but just if he gets a goal in the first period, then he can just coast into the next couple. Let's talk to Adnan Virk, who's joining us, MLB Network, NHL Network, and Cinephile Podcast. Adnan, how's it going?
Hey, Alice, Justin, it's been too long. Great to see you guys. I'm just here at my son's high school track meet, so apologize that this has made it a little shaky at times. But hey, beautiful New Jersey sunshine right
now.
Yeah,
you're looking nice. Jealous. What are we running today? What's the track? What's the event of choice?
Yeah, I'll flip it around. You know, Yusuf is running in the 200 meters and the 4x100. Everyone loves a good relay, but I didn't catch all of it, but I think he did pretty well. I miss like the old school, you know, the shot put, the javelin. Oh, I didn't see any of that. Just a lot of running on the track today. Hardcore cardio. I love it.
The things I did not succeed at. I loved a good shot put, a javelin, triple jump. Those were my favorites. Less cardio. Let's talk about your
the
Yankees.
Ultimate.
Yeah. The least fun ones. Let's talk about your Yankees.
Ellis, wait, before we continue, excellent play about triple jump. Like that's something that I'm like, that is a very unique skill set. Like I don't know how they came up with triple jump, but I agree with you. If you can master the triple jump, you have my respect.
Yeah, it was a good one. A good leg strength you needed on that one. All right. So Blue Jays and Yankees, of course, the Yankees lose consecutive games for the first time this season to our Toronto Blue Jays. And last night's praise, a lot of it went to Chris Bassitt for the kitchen sink that he can throw throw at least eight different pitches last night. I just wonder from an outsider view, like how valuable someone like Chris Bassitt would be for this rotation when he's healthy, he's competitive, and he can go hopefully another 200 innings pitched with such a unique skill set.
Yeah, Ellis, I think he's critical for this team because, you know, Kevin Gausman is yet to get going so far. I know he wasn't at 100%, and that's where there was some concern coming out of spring. But, you know, when that splitter's on, forget about it. And historically, Gausman's been great against the Yankees. He did not play well in that start against them. Now, Barrios has been an absolute stud. I know we're going to get to him, the fact that he's very much in the Cy Young conversation 2 weeks in. But Bass, to me, is a critical piece because coming over from the Mets, the number three starter, his durability is unquestioned. You know, he's one of those five pitchers that can still throw 200 innings and can be a strikeout or inning kind of guy. Pitches deep into games, is durable, worked out of jams as well. So I think Bassett's critical because Kikuchi, even though he had a great bounce-back season, I know some people are still skeptical perhaps whether or not you can really depend on him as a number four guy throughout the season, but I think he's fine. And, of course, the number five spot, Yariel Rodriguez, signed from Cuba. Maybe Manoah comes back at some point. You know, Ricky Tiedemann maybe at some point from AAA, we'll see. But I think Bassett's critical because I think Barrios, you know, is an absolute stud. I think with Gausman, you know he'll figure it out. Bassett could be that third piece. And honestly, guys, I think if you have three great starters, you feel pretty good about your baseball team.
Yeah, and that gives the Blue Jays a little bit of a safety net there because you can kind of mix and match what those three starters may look like on the best of days or weeks or months. The Blue Jays can have five really good starters. So that's definitely the strength of their team at the moment. Talking about AL East additions, I mean, you got to start with Juan Soto, right? But I want to go to Justin Turner, who might be number two in terms of impactful guys to not enter the division, but I guess change teams or get into a new clubhouse with a team this year. Justin Turner has been really, really important so far for the Blue Jays. What have you seen, and has any of it surprised you that he continues at his age to rake?
Hasn't surprised me because I look at his numbers a season ago, Justin. I'm like, this guy's 20-plus home runs, 90-plus RBI. He's one of those guys, you know you're going to get the intangibles, meaning he's a great leader. He's fun in the clubhouse. The guys all love him. But to me, he also gives you the tangibles. Like, he's still a guy that can hit. He can do so in his mid to late 30s. And this Blue Jays lineup, as we all know, coming out of the gate, it looked like it really needed a lot more length. It really feels like, hey, it's Bo and Flatty, and after that, let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I kept seeing the people coming into the season. Alejandro Kirk has to be better. Dalton Varsho has to be better. George Springer has to be better. Like, those three guys, specifically offensively, were all below 100 OPS plus. Now, they still need to be better. That clearly is a part of this team's mojo. But you can get some pick and pop here from Davis Schneider. And maybe a guy like Turner can be critical. Because honestly, if you're batting cleanup, he offers so much protection behind Bichette and Vlad Jr. And I think, you know, look at the Dodgers. They go 1-2-3. As good in the history of the game when it comes to Betts, Otani, and Freddie Freeman. But for the Jays, similarly, you need to have a third amigo. You need to have somebody else in there that can do that, and Turner can be critical. So I look at the numbers yesterday, Justin, you're right. Hitting over .380, I believe, is on base, is over .450, slugging over .550. Like, that's fantastic. And especially in a one-year contract, you know, the Jays aren't giving up much here for Justin Turner. The fact is, not even a multi-year deal. He's been able to do what he's done so far. Terrific signings so far.
Yeah, we were giving a little bit of love to Turner and even IKF yesterday because, you know, it wasn't the sexy as off seasons for the Blue Jays, but those guys have come up big and maybe helped change a little bit of this offseason narrative, but we just hope it doesn't end up being like a Matt Chapman situation where they have the month of no one else has ever seen in baseball and then they fall off, but we won't get down that track. Tomorrow's going to be a big one. Gausman and Stroman on the mound. I guess for a multitude of reasons, a really interesting matchup. We'll go to Kevin Gausman first, though. Hasn't been himself to start, and obviously with the lead-up, the shorter lead-up through spring training, he's kind of just working through it. But have you seen anything in his performances so far that is more than just a slower start? Is there anything that's causing alarm, or do you believe that Kevin Gausman can still be that ace that the Blue Jays need?
I think he'll be fine, Ellis. You know, from what I've seen, like you said, these guys haven't ramped up yet. And you see how important spring training is? I know everyone says, oh, 6 weeks is too long. You don't need it. But look at Blake Snell. You know, he didn't sign. Scott Boras, obviously, is his agent, waited, took his time, and also he signed to the Giants. And, you know, you can't expect these guys to come out of the gate guns blazing. You know, he gave up 7 runs in 4 innings against the Rays the other day. It's because you need that time in spring training. I don't care what these sim games are like. I don't care what kind of enhancements these guys are on. I don't care what kind of regimen they're on. Like, can't do it. You can't replicate 6 weeks of spring training, even 4 months of spring training. So just as Snell was the late arrival, Gausman was not 100%. They knew he had to work up his endurance and get to that max effort. He did not start opening day, although he normally would have. And so I think what you see is just a little less velocity and a little less bite on his pitches. If you look at best pitches in the game, if I said Zach Wheeler's four-seamer, Garrett Cole's four-seamer, if I looked at Clayton Kershaw's curveball or sinker, you know, Kevin Gausman's splitter is up there with Shohei Ohtani's splitter. It's an absolutely incredible pitch, and the numbers bear that out. You can see what he's been able to do with that pitch against opposing batters. And that splitter did not have the same split, that same dive action, particularly in that start I watched against the Yankees. So I think he's going to be fine. It just takes time. Gausman has an incredible track record. He's a top five pitcher in the American League, and clearly the Jays are going to need him if they're going to be successful this season.
So, Adnan, the Yankees are the Yankees, but the Yankees feel more like the Yankees this year, if that makes any sense. And Juan Soto, his arrival, and the tandem of Soto and Judge, it feels like, yeah, coupled with this start, that it's done something, maybe for the market, maybe for baseball. Is there a reinvigoration surrounding the Yankees given this start and what they brought in over the offseason?
Without question, Justin. You know, they've got the best record in baseball right now, and I make my home here in North Jersey, Bergen County. It's surrounded by Yankees fans, and like you can feel the mojo back. It's like this is going to be pretty scary season, I think, for Yankee opposition. And for Yankee haters, I have bad news. I think they're going to be legitimate, really good. To me, it feels like it's them and the Orioles battling for top spot in the American League East. Like, the O's are ridiculous, man. They're so loaded. Colton Cowser just won Player of the Week. You've got Rutschman. You've got Gunnar Henderson. They just called up Jackson Holliday. Burns is a legit ace. Like, the Orioles feel really special. But the Yankees, they're doing this without Garrett Cole. They got the best record in baseball, 12-5. As Yelich pointed out, it is good news that Jays are able to take a couple right away. But Soto is such a difference maker, man. Like, I'm watching this guy. He gets a walk in every game, so he's always on base. He does damage. His slugging percentage is over .560. He'll hit you home runs. And he's also been above average defensively. Like, in the past, defensively, he was pretty shaky. But he had a great outfield assist week one. He's been an above average base runner. He's been a huge influence in the other guys. Like, Soto's amazing, man. Like, I know he turned down that 15-year 440 from the Nationals because, again, his agent Scott Boras did not like the AAV of 29.3 per year. But if I'm the Yankees, just show me the money, man. Just sign him. Go ahead. I don't care if it's $500 million, $600 million. Like, he's deserving of it. And I'm sure Brian Lott would agree. I mean, anybody who knows baseball knows this team, that he is worthy of that kind of money. So I hope Soto will. I mean, I know he's going to get paid, but I hope he continues to the Yankees because it's a good story. Like, it's nice to have your best players at their best in the biggest markets. And you mentioned Judge, Justin. He's yet to get going. Like, his average is only around .214. He has walked a ton, but he's striking at a little bit of a higher rate than normal. But overall, for the Yankees, they haven't struck out much. That's been their biggest difference. They've cut down their whiff percentage by 5%. Anthony Volpe went from striking at 28% of at-bats last year to 11%. Mm-hmm. When you're dropping by 17%, like, that's staggering. And Volpe looks like a different player out there. He looks like a star in the making. It could be a guy the Yankees will love for years to come. So Soto's been a big part of it, but Volpe's been great too. And as well, De Cabrera, kind of like an IKF-type player, can play different players, very good utility player. He's been good.
So you reside in a Yankee town, which means you're in John Sterling country. Last one for you, Adnan. What was the reaction to Sterling's announcement yesterday and what he's meant to the New York Yankees?
Great question, Justin. I was on set on MLB Tonight with my buddy Harold Reynolds and for Alex Avila, and mainly we all jumped into our John Sterling impressions. Oh, you know, I can't predict baseball, Susan. Like, he's got such a great baritone. I remember early on when I was at ESPN, I was at a game at Yankee Stadium, walked by him in the hall, didn't think he knew who I was. Adnan, how are you? Nice to see you. I'm like, oh my God, John Sterling. He's an absolute legend, man. He's called over 5,000 straight games. He called every single game of Derek Jeter's and Mariano Rivera's. Like, that's a pretty incredible statement. From 89 to 09, he did not miss a game. He called over 216 Yankee playoff games. He's awesome. Those great stentorian pipes, his class, his dignity, well-liked by all. The tandem of him and Susan Waldman, iconic when it comes to Yankee broadcasts. To be the voice of the Yankees on the radio is a really special place. And John Sterling did it for so many years. I was worried immediately if he was okay. And thankfully, it looks like he's all right. Just, it's that time. He's 85 years old. But a special voice, special person. Of course, everyone loves his nicknames and his calls and all the home runs. Some might argue it's a little bit gimmicky, but I thought it was always funny and entertaining. And he's a class act. We wish him well.
A quick one, because we did promise Jose Berrios, AL Cy Young, at least comment from you. It's too early to be giving out any awards, but Berrios at least laying the foundation to be involved in that discussion for you?
I love him, man. I remember years ago on the Twins that if he's not an ace, he's like a 1B. Like, he's not a true ace. He's not a 1A, but he's like a 1B. And when the Jays got him, I go, this guy's a stud. And I remember he struggled so terribly. And I said, oh, my God, they gave him that big contract, $137 million. But I've always liked the guy. And part of the reason is Alex Cora is a good friend, of course, in my years at ESPN. And Alex is the manager of the Red Sox. And I asked him one time, like, what's going on with Berrios, your buddy? Because, of course, they are both from Puerto Rico. And Alex was the GM of the Puerto Rico WBC team. And he told me bluntly, he said, he's become too predictable. He said, quite frankly, when Barrios is pitching, we know exactly where he's going and exactly what counts, and he's become too predictable, and that's it. And he's figured it out. To his credit, he's worked with his game plan, and this stuff is filthy, man. Like, he's legitimately fun to watch pitch baseball. Like, that's how much fun Barrios is. I'm a big Cole Reagans guy. He's been awesome for the Royals, who've been a great story. Tarek Skubal with the Tigers as well. But, yeah, you can certainly put Barrios in that Cy Young conversation. Like I said, to me, if he's not 1A, he's 1B. And right now, he's pitching like a 1A because he's been absolutely legit for the Jays. And it's fun to see. Like, when his breaking ball is going, it's fun to see the break on that ball because he's fun to watch. He's really talented.
We got your Yankees and your Flyers on a little later on the network. So we'll be seeing if Adnan can get the sweep of his teams. It's Adnan night here at Sportsnet. We appreciate your time, and thanks for jumping on with us.
And absolutely, as quick thought, Ailis, since you mentioned my Flyers, I drove the game Saturday, Wayne Simmons jersey retirement night, 2.5 hours to get there. A gutsy 1-0 win over the Devils, who have nothing to play for. It took me 40 minutes to get out of the parking lot because at the same time at the Phillies game. What are we doing? 3 hours to get home to North Jersey. But it was all worth it for that 1-0 win. So, well, we need a little luck here tonight. Maybe the Flyers can get in.
There you go. They need a win, and they also need Montreal to win in regulation. So it should be a fun one. We'll be cheering for you. Thanks so much, Adnan. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Alice, Justin. Great to see you both again.
You as well. Thanks so much. Adnan Virk, MLB Network, NHL Network, Cinephile Podcast. A Flyers fan, a Yankees fan, and a Eagles fan.
Yeah, I think he's going to, well, not for the Eagles, but he's going to find the television set, I think, tonight.
He'll be locked in. We got all of that on Sportsnet for him.
He doesn't have to flip many channels. Quickly on the Barrios Cy Young thing. Again, way too early. There's some signs that Barrios underlying, maybe not quite on the level as the guys who are also pitching really well. But 28-1 right now. With Gerrit Cole not available, Shane Bieber not available, Framber Valdez may be fine, but still dealing with a setback. Kevin Gausman's always near the top of the Cy Young, and he's maybe, you know, throwing away the first month of the season with poor performance.
Mm-hmm. That's a better way to put it, yes.
But yeah, right now it seems like the door is wide open with kind of new blood competing at the top with Skubal and Reagans, as he mentioned, and Corbin Burns coming over from the National League. It just seems like maybe is the time to take a shot on anyone at a long price, given that it's more wide open this year than it has been previous.
Yeah, 4 quality starts, a 1, like basically a 1 ERA, and 21 Ks. He's like pretty much at the top of the AL right now. And as you mentioned, there's some guys on the injury list. And I don't know when Gerrit Cole's coming back, but it's not the whole season. So
he probably can't win because he's not going to pitch enough.
Yeah, so there you go. There's your futures cuff. Speaking of bets, that's one of them. But we'll give you our best bets for tonight. I mean, I got all eyes on Auston Matthews tonight to get goal number 70. The Panthers are putting in their backup goaltender. The Leafs have basically one thing to play for, and it's to get Matthews 70 goals. Pretty good number, too. Like, usually,
yeah, I'm surprised it's not minus 140.
Usually, I mean, he's scored in 8 consecutive games. Like, this guy's got 69 goals. Minus 105, I think you got to do it. And if you want to parlay it with, like, a shots over to get a little bit of a plus money, I did a Matthews goal plus 4-plus shots, and it was, like, plus 150. So if you want to get spicy or you just want to bet Matthews to score, I think tonight's the night.
I got the Capitals in regulation plus 175. We talked about it a little bit. The Flyers are in a position where they have to win in regulation. Therefore, they would be potentially pulling their goaltender with 10-5 minutes left in the game in order to try and chase that regulation win. So if the Capitals are even in a tie game late, they might just ice it into an empty net and win in regulation because going to extra time does nothing for the Flyers. And very, very quickly, because we've been trying to talk about the NBA and betting for a little bit here, the Dallas Mavericks, things broke well for them here with the way that the bracket has set up. Mavericks get the Clippers, and they're a favorite in the first round, minus 130. And then if they win, they advance, they would get likely the Thunder if they can get past their first round series. Usually you can't just show up, even if you had a great regular season like the Thunder have, and just start winning basketball series. The Mavericks have been around a little bit more experience. So Mavericks each way to win the Western Conference, get into a final, a Western Conference final potentially with Denver, and you get paid out a reasonable amount there. So 650 Mavericks to win the Western Conference. I think they've got the path, and I think that's a valuable bet.
Okay, as we've mentioned, busy night on the network. Stick with us on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're going to talk to Shayna Goldman. Sportsnet West and Sportsnet Pacific will have Hockey Central, as you mentioned, a big game, Washington and Philadelphia on that first, and then Calgary and Vancouver. And then on Sportsnet, of course, Blue Jays Central ahead of Jays, Yankees. And we'll take a quick break. We'll see you on the other side.
everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, a hot debate is about the Hot Heart Trophy. The Hot Heart Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
Lots to go through, of course. And Shayna, great articles at The Athletic if you haven't read them. Very like nice, analytical, accessible, detailed case for a lot of the top couple, Nate, Matthews, Kucherov, McDavid. But I think it's going to be so interesting when we finally get these ballots placed and we can finally look through what people value as most important, I guess, determining factor. Because mm-hmm. could it be, and this is always the thing with the Heart, most valuable player to your team or the most valuable player in the league or the most valuable player of your point, of your career? Was it your most valuable season? Like those things, like the MVP is already broad enough. So this always has a little bit of your own coloring in it.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I think a lot of people are a little gun-shy to actually participate in the voting process because, yeah, pitchforks, torches, they are out and they are ready to be pointed at the direction of those who may zig or zag compared to based on how you feel about the award. And I guess your own interpretation of the award. I mean, it's good that it's this hotly contested because, yeah, there's something to talk about and there's amazing performances happening in the league this year. But, yeah, you almost have a little intestinal fortitude to even participate in this process if you're going to be voting on it this year.
No, well, you teed up our next convo. Great. I hope Shayna's ready to enter the ring. Shayna Goldman of The Athletic, the Too Many Men podcast. Shayna, thanks for jumping on. How's it going?
Going well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, the Hart Trophy. I'm sure you haven't been asked about it whatsoever, and I'm sure you're not having debates with friends and colleagues about this, but I think Justin raises a good point. It's exciting because it feels different this year. It feels like there's a real case to be made for quite a few players, and with the final couple days of hockey remaining, still things to play for. How are you having discourse around the Hart Trophy, and is it as exciting for you as it is for us?
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. It's a good thing when the stars star. It's a good thing when we're talking about the rise of scoring and multiple, you know, 60 goal scorers and 100 assists for two players potentially. Like those are huge numbers. We should be talking about them. The one downside is that there's players who aren't going to be in the race. And I think that's where a lot of the discourse stems from. In any other year, Roman Josi is a Hart candidate. So is Sidney Crosby. So is Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, goalies, you can make the case that they should be in the race every year. Guys like Pastrnak and Panarin are not going to be in the top three in voting because there's too many players at the top of the ballot. But it's such an exciting year between McKinnon, McDavid, Matthews, and Kucherov. We're so spoiled that as much as everyone can, you know, get into it and have their discourse, we have to enjoy it too because it's something we haven't seen in years.
So there will be officially a couple hundred ballots, generally around the 200 voter range. And on those ballots will be five names. And of course, we'll get three nominations. I kind of wanted to do something a little bit different with you today and do kind of the criteria ballot. Instead of three names, three things that are, you know, pretty important checkpoints when trying to determine who you are going to put on your ballot in the end. So I guess we won't start at three. We'll start at one in the Nathan McKinnon spot, at least for me. What's the most important thing for you when assessing the Hart Trophy? What is the most valuable thing when determining the most valuable?
It's all around value. I like someone that contributes across the board. It could be easy to look at someone that scores a ton of points or a ton of goals. I think you need to do more than that. Do you score at a high rate? You know, especially are you the leading scorer of your team? Do you contribute a lot of 5-on-5? Do you drive play? Are you just a product of the players around you? Do you have someone else that's Hart Trophy caliber, you know, top five in voting at your side most of the time? You know, you want to see how someone controls play and what direct impact they have on their team's offense or defense. So someone like McKinnon, you're going to want to see the percentage of points that he's earned when he's on the ice for a goal or out of, you know, Colorado's goal total, you know, altogether. That's something that's really going to help someone like Kucherov's case. I think you need to find all around value. And that obviously varies per player, per position. It kind of makes sense why we always talk about forwards because we can, you know, balance out the criteria a little bit better there. But I think you have to do a little bit of everything.
And when you're explaining that, that sounds like Nathan McKinnon to me. That's we did this discussion yesterday, Justin and I, and we both had Nate as our top player for the heart at the moment, because it is, like, as you mentioned, the all encompassing of him, the way that he can take over the game, the way that his points are almost like perfectly in the middle of being not only excellent but 5-on-5 and not that close to the player next to him. Like, he has all those check marks, right? And that alone, like that one explanation you give to me, would be enough for being able to determine the Hart Trophy. But I guess Justin asked you three of them.
Well,
I don't even know what else you would add to
it's,
that.
It's interesting, though, because, yeah, all encompassing does encompass a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I cheated just a little bit. I'm sorry.
It's a perfect answer.
I think it's because we put our opinions on it. Does all encompassing mean Nathan MacKinnon for you? When you were explaining that answer, you know, was Nathan MacKinnon scoring goals flashing in your mind at the same time?
Yeah. And listen, he gets an advantage because when he plays the game, you see him, mm-hmm. you know, rush down the ice in such a dominant way. There's such like a forceful nature to his game. It's easy to picture him, but I really do. But I do put Kucherov pretty close to him. Mm-hmm. And this is where I've been torn, because you have the defensive issues and the support issues there, and you have to try to counteract that. You have the empty net points, and I know that a big deal has been made of that, and it was 14. Mm-hmm. I forget if he got any of the last two games, honestly, but I know he was at 14 the other day, which led the league. But even if you take those out, and even if you try to, you know, account for his power play scoring, if that's too much, he still hits the marks really highly in my book.
Okay, so... I think a big question that we're trying to debate, and maybe you've been able to do this, is assign value on assists versus goals. And obviously primary assists we know are way more important than secondary assists, but 100 assists versus 70 goals. Now, I don't know really how you're supposed to evaluate that, but that's why you're here. Like, how do you start to try to, I guess, cross-examine and weigh those two different feats? Because those are two significant feats that haven't been accomplished in a very long time or often at all. And we might see that on both sides. We might see two individuals get 100 assists, which I wonder for you if that devalues it at all as well.
Yeah, it doesn't devalue it for me because it's such a rare feat and we know that. But it's such a challenging one, the goals versus assists conversation. Two ways I tried to do it. One was by the numbers, and Dominique Shishin's model, it's 93% of a goal is a primary assist and 73% is a secondary assist. So if you put that together and apply it to everyone scoring, Austin Matthews is still fourth and McDavid's ahead of him. And it is because he just has more points, right? Like, that does make a difference too. The other part of it was when I was writing the Hart Trophy story, I was so torn on this, and I don't like to talk about things that I'm unsure about. I can't question myself in the story because I think it'll come across the whole time. So I decided to go to the video and I watched all of Matthew's even strength goals and I watched all of McDavid's even strength primary assists to try to see how much puck control went into it from each player. Matthews at times could earn a secondary assist on his own goal. And he does deserve credit for that, right? He can't help when his teammates don't do anything with the passes he's giving them, and he is passing the puck at a high rate. But sometimes he makes it work himself. So he does, you know, earn marks there. But with McDavid, there is something that's just a little bit different that was kind of giving me the edge there for him. How much you see him rush up the ice and he's the one, you know, entering the zone or even sometimes exiting the zone, how he's making all of the plays happen that you literally just need to tap in. And it's not meant to be a knock to anyone he plays with. Like, not everybody can still finish their chance, even if they're given a prime scoring opportunity from McDavid. But it's the way he does it and how dangerous that passing is and that puck movement is. It gave me the very, very, very slight edge over Matthews, but you could go either way there. Mm-hmm.
So if I'm reading between the lines correctly, Kucherov and MacKinnon kind of on the top of the list for you, and then McDavid and Matthews would be 3-4 in, I guess, in order. I guess you'd go with Connor McDavid there. Why is McDavid not on the same level as MacKinnon or Kucherov?
Two things. One, the injury earlier this season hurts him. It's out of his control. I know that. It just hurts him. And, you know, I know he missed a couple games. It's not so much that, but it was that he had that slower start when he came back and was playing hurt. That definitely, I think, can lower his value, because if he was healthy all year, he probably would have 140 points. And I don't think we'd even be having the conversation at all. We would just be looking at him and only him. You know, I know there's the Connor McDavid fatigue, but that is the very slight difference for me. The other part of it is the value of some of their high-end pieces is so high up there too, right? Braden Point's had a great second half. He really wasn't as strong in the first half. And Victor Hedman hit his stride in the second half. But you look at Bouchard. Besides, you know, I think it's tough with him because when he makes a defensive mistake, especially in the beginning of the year, it was going in the back of the net. It was so obvious. But his value is very high in Edmonton, and so is Matthias Ekholm's. And the same is true with Leon Draisaitl. So that factor, I think, can weigh McDavid down when you have to get down to this level where we're nitpicking every detail.
When does the first non-forward get on your list? Like, how hard do you find it to evaluate non-goal scorers, non-playmakers, goaltenders, for example, or defensemen when you're trying to evaluate the heart? Because it's a little bit of a different strategy.
Yeah. It reminds me 2 years ago when it was Auston Matthews against Igor Shesterkin. I didn't vote that year, but Shesterkin would have had my vote if I did. I think goalies, I would be completely and totally happy with goalies getting 1, 2, 3 across the board. Last year, it could have been Saros, Sorokin right there with Linus Ullmark, and I wouldn't have, you know, any issue with it. I don't think we give goalies enough credit just because they have their own trophy when forwards have the most trophies of anyone. But if you go down the list this year, and you have those top four and you have to kind of go through the rest of your ballot, my 5 and 6 would be pretty close between Crosby and Yossi, I think. Mm-hmm. And then Connor Hellebuck's right there.
Yeah.
And those are the three that I would really have to sort through. I get the argument if the Penguins don't make the playoffs, maybe that's a knock on Crosby's case. I don't know if it should be. I think that he has been everything and more for them. But I think the overall value of Yossi has to be right up there with it's that tier below the top four that I think him, Crosby, and Hellebuck should be that next tier of players in the conversation.
Is that the most difficult thing to place, like the Sidney Crosby of this season, where it's like, yeah, where would you be without Sidney Crosby? Even though with Sidney Crosby, you haven't gone very far, but like this guy's single-handedly put a team on his back, and that is a objective thing, right? Like, of course, there's some numbers to, or subjective thing, I'm sorry, there's some numbers to support it, but it's like, no, it's like, look what he's done, look what he has to work with, and look at the results that he is driving almost single-handedly when you're in the absence of 150 points or 70 goals, 100 assists, or whatever the metric may be. Like, how do you place a Sidney Crosby or a Yossi or a Hellebuck based on just like relative to their team and performance relative to teammates?
Well, vibes have to mesh in somewhere with the points and the value, right? We need a little bit of everything with every award. But with Crosby, the numbers do support it. You know, you look at that performance against Nashville the other night, and that was a must win for Pittsburgh. And you see in the first period, I think shot attempts at 5-on-5 were 15-0 in Crosby's minutes. And he's doing this now without Jake Guentzel. So if anyone wanted to try to push anything at him, there you have it. The other thing you can look at for him is how the team does without him on the ice. And it's not something I feel like should be your first, you know, go-to number, but that bottom six has struggled to score so much this season and they've still managed. I think if the power play was clicking in Pittsburgh, and we all know it's just broken beyond belief right now, and it has been all year, he would be in that point total conversation. You know, you can look at his 5-on-5 scoring and the 5-on-5 impact, and it's so there. For Yossi, it's especially how he's played in that turnaround. When you know... the Predators, we have it a little easier, right? Because we can all look at the date after them completely losing to Dallas is the day of their turnaround and everything changed from there. And he was very good before that. Yeah, exactly. Who knew? That's the everyone's going to have that. If your team's struggling, cancel a concert. That's going to be the new narrative. I can't wait for it. But, you know, you look at his play during that stretch, as well as what he did earlier that season, and you just see how much the ice is tilted in those minutes, how many points he scored on the team's goals, how much the team's outscoring opponents in his minutes. And you look at the fact that he's playing just like Crosby, all of those important minutes, right? If they need a goal at 6-on-5, he's out there. If they're defending a 5-on-6, he's also out there. They're in 3-on-3 overtime, he's over the boards first every single time. So I think all of that has to come into consideration as well.
We're talking to Shayna Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. All right, enough with the Hart Trophy discussion, but I think you did a really eloquent job at putting into all of our baloney into
maybe
a nice,
just,
beautiful sentence.
Forget the 200 voters, just Shayna decides.
Yeah, Shayna decides.
Okay, there we go.
a big storyline here, obviously, is Bruins, Leafs, and the Panthers, right? Kind of jockeying for who would be their playoff opponent. I wonder for you, like, looking at the matchup-wise, if the Maple Leafs or the Panthers or the Bruins got to pick who their best opponent would be, because it did feel like last night the Bruins might have been tanking games. We're not going to get into that, but tonight, obviously, the Panthers and the Leafs are playing tonight, and of course, that could be a round one playoff matchup, but so could the Bruins. Like, if you're a Maple Leafs fan, like, who do you think your team matches up better against, the Bruins or the Panthers?
I think it might be the Bruins. It's really close. The Bruins, to me, are a really good team. Don't get me wrong. They are up in the standings for a good reason. They haven't dominated as much as I would expect a contender to a 5-on-5 throughout the season. It's the one area of concern I have. I know they have a ton of depth. I know they have a great blue line. Their goaltending's elite. But sometimes the scoring outside of David Pastrnak, I would want a little bit more. I think the Panthers are just a little bit more complete that I wouldn't want to go up against them. You look at the way Tkachuk's playing, and mm-hmm. Barkov is probably going to win the Selke for good reason. The defense will be healthy. I think that Boston is the team maybe you could try to take advantage of a little bit more there. But, I mean, there's no easy matchup, right?
There's trauma in both matchups, too. It's like, do you want to slay the dragon of the Bruins and all of that postseason, or the fresher, deeper wounds that might be the Panthers? Like, maybe
there's really no way out for the Maple Leafs. Yeah. Walls closing in from both directions. But it is interesting from the Bruins standpoint, and I didn't watch. I just saw the shot totals. Yeah. I don't know what happened in that game last night, but I know it wasn't a Bruins-like output at the very least. But I'm thinking about Tampa, too. And I don't know if the Bruins are trying to game this at all. But if the Bruins and Lightning meet in the first round, I'm taking Tampa. Are you worried about Tampa if you're a Bruins fan, Shana?
Yeah, I would not want Tampa. It's not what I was saying at the beginning of the year, because they did look a little bit cooked, and then Nikita Kucherov started to change that. Tampa has flaws. Look, Steven Stamkos is scoring a ton, but his defense has been really suspect. That blue line outside of Hedman definitely needs some help. Maybe they'll have Sergachev back, but that's a wild card. And then the other weaknesses, that Andrei Vasilevsky has been so inconsistent this year. And I know it was to be expected at first coming back from injury, but the way it's continued throughout the season is red flags me. That being said, would not want to face that team. Absolutely. Mm-mm. No day of the week with that. You know, if I'm a team and you get to pick your opponent, they would be one of the last teams I'd pick. You know, Vasilevsky can turn it on in the playoffs. You look at the first year, they won the cup. He had a pretty average regular season. The playoffs came around and he was lights out. You know that power play is dynamic and dangerous. And you know that they have those game-breaking players, and they have that star power to steal a game or steal a series. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not the team I'd want to go up against, especially after them losing in round one last year. Like, you know they have something to prove.
Yeah, and the Rangers in a very enviable spot, having to not deal with Tampa on a crossover with a couple wins to close out. I want to talk about Vegas for a second, because it looks like a nightmare scenario may be playing out for the Oilers. If the Vegas Golden Knights get into number three, like, is that disaster scenario for the Oilers if they can't catch the Canucks?
It's a much different look than it would be if it were LA. I think LA is the team that they could walk all over, because LA is so good defensively but doesn't bring it enough offensively, that I feel like they're only playing one side of the game a little bit. But when you look at Vegas, they have the depth. Their scoring can come in waves. They have multiple shutdown lines, and this is the biggest weakness for the Oilers. Obviously, any matchup you have, everyone's going to want to shut down Connor McDavid. But when you go up against a team that has two pairs and two lines, if Mark Stone plays, if he's healthy enough, that can shut down McDavid, or at least try to contain him, and Draisaitl, I think that spells a little bit of trouble. But I do think that there are some weaknesses we're seeing in Vegas's game. You know, before the deadline, we saw their 5-on-5 game kind of breaking down a little bit. Noah Hanifin helped that, and I think players like Hurdle have helped that as well in a very small sample. But then sometimes the goaltending's a little unstable. Maybe they're not defending leads enough. I think when the playoffs come around, you're not going to see that complacency that bit them in a couple games, like that game against Arizona, what was that, a week or two ago? But I think Vegas is, no one wants to face them in round one, and rightfully so.
Okay, last one for you. Big night on the network, of course. There's like a bunch of clinching scenarios, and all of them are revolving around one wild card spot. Capitals, Red Wings, Penguins, Flyers. The team, and you mentioned it, for vibe's sake, that you want to see find their way into the playoffs?
For vibe's sake, listen, it'd be great to see Sidney Crosby go for a run, but for the vibes, it's Detroit.
Yeah, last night was amazing.
How could you not love that? Lucas Raymond's doing is amazing, and you hear the quotes from David Perron talking about Larkin and how they want to do this for him. Like, who doesn't want to run through a wall for Dylan Larkin now? Like, we all have to get excited about that.
That was my pick, too. Hockey in Detroit, playoffs in Detroit, that's like a whole nother level. So I think I'm on the same page as that. They could figure it out tonight. We might have bet on that as well. Well, Shana, I appreciate your time tonight. This was great. Enjoy the rest of the regular season and a very busy playoff push.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Shana Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men. podcast. Yeah, Capitals, Red Wings, Penguins, Flyers, all fighting for that final spot. The Red Wings can do it tonight if they beat the Canadiens and the Capitals lose. So I wonder if you're split screening it. If you got that iPad on Sportsnet now, like, you know, just looking, checking out Sportsnet Plus while you're on the bench, checking the games out.
Yeah, that's like at the feet, scores. Right? You got the Caps game on the
check
feet.
Check this
at the feet.
Goal out, but it's actually the score. I mean, it'd be nice to know, or do you just want to play your game and get off the ice and figure out if you're in the playoffs?
See, it's interesting, right? Because the NBA over the weekend did something I think entirely brand new, where they had all the Eastern Conference teams play at 1, all the Western Conference team played at like 3:34 around that time. Because, you know, you don't want results, you know, affecting, you know, who's going to play or load management, et cetera, et cetera. True. It's something you'd see in like an international tournament, Euro, World Cup, the teams that are in the same groups play at the same time. So you can't game the system a little bit. And I thought, like, that's overdoing it. Like, no one, like, it's not that serious. 82 games and it's going to be, okay, can Kawhi Leonard sit an extra, whatever, 10 minutes? Like, it's, I guess it makes sense, but it's not something that you normally see in the NHL or an NBA. And I guess now that I'm thinking about it more, I kind of like to see that happen tonight, because Pittsburgh being left out of the equation tonight, having to wait for tomorrow, it just seems like, yeah, you can't script it perfectly. You're never going to really know, but maybe every team in the division plays their same game at the same time or their final game at the same time. So you can kind of match them up that way and make sure that every game means something and that results aren't going to be kind of squandered or certain efforts squandered at the end of the season. It would be awesome tonight if all these teams were playing at the exact same time. Fortunately and fortuitously, the Capitals, Red Wings, and Flyers will all be in action in meaningful games on Sportsnet tonight. But yeah, it was interesting to see the NBA go that route, because it does make a lot of sense, even though in the moment I thought, well, you're kind of overdoing it.
This is always an interesting time, too, to take a look at the rosters that are actually being iced tonight. Get the Hurricanes and the Blue Jackets, for example, like, 90% of the Hurricanes players will not be playing. So this is like an interesting...
Which is a feat. It's
going to be interesting. There's a bunch of different storylines for those. And when you know it's your last game, it's Columbus Blue Jackets, like their last home game. Are they going to give in a little bit extra for their fans? Like, you know, the Detroit Red Wings and Montreal Canadiens, I cannot wait to see. After what Detroit did last night to the Canadiens, after being down, forcing their way to overtime, winning in overtime, that place was rocking. I feel like they come out like with an absolute bang tonight. Yeah. I think they blow the Canadiens away. I'm interested to see if, you know, Ovi can put the Capitals on his back tonight. Like, do we see a multi-goal Ovi night where he just says, I want this team to, like, I'm not done not playing the playoffs, right? This is like the story was, all you're playing for this year is Ovi's goals, goals, goals. But now they have a chance to actually make the playoffs if they beat the Flyers in any fashion tonight. I think maybe Ovi puts on his cape and we see vintage Ovi tonight. Why not?
Yeah, or he wants to, you know, put less stress on the body and make sure he can score goals next year.
I said that last week and I laughed about it, but it could be real.
But it looks like Washington definitely got the best chance. They got a win and they're in. They're in a good scenario after Boston may or may not have come with an honest effort last night. Very quickly, the NBA play-in tournament begins tonight. It's weird to call it a tournament. It's a play-in. Anyway,
yes,
it's in the Western Conference tonight. Big teams involved. The Lakers are +1 at the New Orleans Pelicans, and the Warriors are favorites on the road, 3-point favorites at the Kings in a rematch of last year's memorable playoff series. I always felt like Lakers-Warriors in the play-in was destined to happen. I guess if they both win, we're not going to see that, but I kind of like both the Lakers and the Warriors tonight. I think the Lakers can get it going for one game at the Pelicans and get that number 7 seed, and I guess we'll see about the Warriors if they can beat the Kings, hold serve as 3-point favorites. But a couple big games, obviously, and we're trying to fill out the bracket in the Western Conference. But yeah, I kind of like the Lakers tonight.
Speaking about brackets, we're going to fill out our own playoff bracket later this week once we definitely have the matches for NHL action. Maybe we can make it a competition with the listeners.
Ooh, how do you propose we do that?
There's websites that do that, and I'll figure it out.
Okay.
We'll see if we can do it. It'd be kind of fun. People can play around. See?
I'm looking forward to it. I love a bracket. Give me a bracket. I'll fill it out.
All right. We were not close in our March Madness brackets. This is redemption.
No, but I feel like we just... we galaxy brained it.
Yeah,
it was UConn always.
It was UConn all the way, but we did make some money. Okay, so busy night tonight, of course. After us here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, you can listen to the Yankees and the Blue Jays, of course, and then Jays Talk afterwards. They'll also be up on Sportsnet. And then Sportsnet West has that Washington-Philly game in about 5 minutes. And then later on, Calgary and Vancouver, that will be another big one. Vancouver's got lots to play for still.
Yep. Regular season, almost done, but big games before that.
Does Matthew score 70?
Yes.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.